Welcome to Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Swiniger and Matthew Keener.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Each episode will focus on a specific topic or two of interest to the community. Today, we're talking attack version 9.
And of course, as usual, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
Podcasting is attacker subtechnique T1553.007. I bet none of you are ready to detect this. So, first topic, only topic, attack V9. V9 is released. Huzzah, and so forth. But first, since we're kind of orienting this podcast towards beginners, we'll start with a short summary on what attack is. Hopefully, it's not be so long that any of you who know what it is are just going to turn this off and run away. So, from the website, a globally accessible knowledge base of adversary tactics and techniques based on real-world observation. That's fancy. But what it really is it's a list of all the tactics the bad guys use. Well, not all of them that have been documented. And what made it so great and what made everybody love it so much is, from the blue team perspective where I'm coming from, one of the long-standing issues was not having a consistent vocabulary or framework for determining what the attacker was doing that we needed to detect. There were a lot of attacker tools out there, but there was no consistent shared way for blue teamers to discuss, do you detect Metasploit? Well, which module? There's, hundreds of modules of Metasploit. And in order to detect them, you would have to go into Metasploit, run them and figure out exactly what it did and then turn around and detect it. And each blue team at each separate company was doing this individually, which is incredibly inefficient. And a lot of blue teams, despite all the hacker mindset and all blue teamers should know how to do red team and stuff like that, a lot of blue teamers did not know how to do that. So we had a lot of issues and a lot of gaps in terms of detections, where every company was kind of detecting things ad hoc, or they were relying on tools to do their detections for them. And anybody that's read Richard Baitlick knows you can't rely on the tools as a black box to do your detections, because if you don't see the data and you don't know how to do the detections, you are not finding bad guys. You are just triaging detections. All right. So I see attack as kind of similar to H.D. Moore's law. If you're not familiar with that, H.D. Moore created Metasploit, or was one of the people that created Metasploit. And his law is that if you cannot stop somebody who is using Metasploit, then you shouldn't be putting your computers on the internet, because any script kiddie can use Metasploit. And if your systems are vulnerable to it, then you're going to be compromised almost immediately. This is kind of the next step in that law. First step is don't put your systems on the internet if they're compromisable by Metasploit. And this is kind of the next step where you can look at, here's all the different techniques the attackers are using, and here's all the different ways that you can detect them. The kill chain was a useful model that came out before attack. But the biggest issue with the kill chain in relation to what attack does is the kill chain didn't give you detailed techniques and detailed kind of methodologies where, for example, the kill chain will say something like the attacker will establish persistence, but attack will say the attacker will establish persistence through one of these methods, such as scheduled task, run key, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot more specific and gives you a lot more information on how to detect things. How is attack organized? Well, it's organized in a couple different ways. The real meat is in the techniques and sub-techniques, but they are organized in at least three different ways. They start off at tactics. Tactics at a high level is kind of similar to the kill chain. Their tactics they have are things like reconnaissance, initial access, execution, persistence. They have several tactics, but they kind of vaguely map to the kill chain. And then underneath each of those tactics, they have techniques. And an example technique for the tactic initial access, an example technique is phishing. And within the last year or so, they've added sub-techniques, which is a little more specific. For example, phishing is great, but that, again, does not get you right down to the level of how do I detect it and what am I specifically looking for. So the sub-techniques there are phishing attachment, phishing link, and phishing via service, such as WhatsApp or Telegram. So now at that point, when you're at the sub-technique, you're at the point where you can start writing some detection logic and start looking at what specifically the attacker is doing. Now, if that was all that Attack gave us, frankly, that'd be enough. There's still a ton of information there. But they also do a couple other things. They have added data sources. They'll tell you where to go look for the logs to help you detect any of these techniques and subtechniques. They have added mitigations. So for example, I am looking at scheduled task job as a technique. It has 7 subtechniques and it has mitigations. They have listed here 4 mitigations that you can use to help prevent the attacker from doing the subtechnique. There are matrices. Not only are these organized by tactic and technique, but they are also organized by platform. We'll talk about a new platform down there. A couple new platforms they just added for cloud and containers, but it's organized by like Windows. So you can just look at techniques that apply to Windows, Mac, network, techniques that only apply to network stuff, et cetera. So it's organized in a couple different ways, depending on how you want to look at it, which is super helpful.
They also have threat actor relationship information in there as well. So if your threat intel team has identified who the threat actors are that are targeting your silo or your organization specifically, then it will help you better understand which tactics, techniques, and sub-techniques will give you the best bang for your buck if you're using those in your prevention framework.
Yeah. So for example, if I go into APT 39, which is apparently Iranian Ministry of Intelligence and Security, it has a list of the techniques and sub-techniques that are used for that particular group. So as much as I don't want to admit that, you know, threat intel might do anything worthwhile, if you do happen to know or are told that you're being targeted by this group, yeah. Additionally, they have a software grouping where they can look at specific types of malware that are employed by the attacker, and that malware will also describe the techniques used. So this one's useful if you happen to detect that malware in your environment. This is just another kind of open source intel where you can go and you can look at what techniques are used. You might be able to turn those around and pivot and look for those techniques elsewhere. It also mentions which APT groups use the malware. So if you do discover you're being targeted by an APT group or a well-known threat actor, it might help you pivot there as well. So useful. Lots of organization there, lots of kind of matrixed organization. So how do you use Attack? Well, there's a couple ways. First of all, if you're just getting started into Attack, there's a bunch of blog posts. There's a, you know, Attack 101 blog post linked off their website. There is a Getting Started with Attack ebook. There is a couple of blog posts on finding cyber threats with Attack-based analytics. There are innumerable number of conference talks given over the last couple of years on Attack. So that is all probably the best place to start in terms of research. Just go to their main website, go to the blog, which comes off there. And there is a page all the way at the top that says Getting Started with Attack. And it's got all their Getting Started articles, which will give you a great start. Next, there's a tool called the Attack Navigator. I had actually attended a webinar where they kind of walked us through using this for threat intel purposes. And that's definitely one thing you can do with it. It allows for you to select and score techniques and then add, multiply, or do number-based calculations based on layers. So for example, you can add a layer for an APT or a threat actor group or, you know, an attacker that you've detected in your environment. Then you can create another layer and you can add your controls and then maybe make an estimate of like, you know, 0.9, because I think, you know, we have about 90% effectiveness on this control. Or 0.1, you know, maybe for a PowerShell one. We've got a couple detections for PowerShell, but there's ways around it. And then you can multiply those layers together and color code it based on the resulting number. And it will tell you, you know, what do you think we would catch this threat actor or not? Kind of like, oh, you know, this threat actor does this, 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 and this, but we've got great detections on those, but we don't have a good detection on this one technique here. And that can help you both kind of figure out where to target your detection next, or it can turn around and help you, I guess, potentially argue for budget. You know, if we need to block this group, we have to buy this new tool we don't have, things like that. Also, this allows you to add and compare detection layers if you wanted to, if you were able to get some real information out of a vendor on, you know, what techniques and what tactics they prevent. You might be able to do a side-by-side comparison of two tools. You can also add all of your own defensive technologies in there and then have it give you kind of a heat map on where you're really strong at detecting and where you're really weak at detecting. And that might help you prioritize log sources or buy new tools, like I said. Any thoughts? Have you used this tool before, David?
I have not, but some of the SIM vendors, most notably Splunk, have got attack built into their SIM now to be able to relate your detections to the tactics, techniques, and sub-techniques within the framework itself as well.
Yeah, that's useful for the rules, but there's some weird kind of, I had to do an exercise a couple of years ago where I had to map our detections and our protections to attack, probably 4 years ago or so. And I found it really frustrating. A lot of vendors just told me, one particular vendor that I won't name said, we cover all of attack. Really? I don't see how that's possible since it covers things like, I guess at the time it only really covered Windows and Mac and some network-based techniques, but yeah, it was not, they tend to be very cagey and they want to say they've got full coverage and they won't tell you specifically what they won't cover. Then you have to do things like trying to model, what does my AV cover? What does my EDR cover? And then turn around and try and add your detections to it. It's a complex subject for sure, but it's nice that it's built into the SIM. At least that'll give you an idea of what your current rule set is detecting. And then with Attack Navigator, it looks like you can, does not look like you can save layers. Can you create layer from other layers? Hyperlink to customize Attack Navigator. This was something that I don't know. Because one of the things I'm sitting here is I'm looking at the Attack Navigator. I'm like, man, I sure wish someone had gone through and created APT layers for me.
Oh, look, they did create the layers for me. It's under multi-select. Looks like you can add the threat groups, and it looks like you can select them all under the same one. It looks like you can add software that's used by the attackers, and it looks like you can add mitigations, although, of course, those are going to be pretty generic mitigations, as capabilities can differ between defensive products. But that's cool. That's cool. Can definitely kind of get an idea, like, well, they've got multi-factor authentication, network intrusion, network segmentation. You can select kind of all the things that you have in place, restrict web-based proxy. Cool. Looks like additionally you can edit the layer information, you can add a description, you can download the layer as JSON, you can export it to Excel, or you can turn it into a picture. So lots of ways to manipulate that. One of the things I've definitely been having trouble with is I'm able to download it as JSON, but when I try and re-upload it, it doesn't come up. But I think that's probably a me problem. I created all the controls for one of our preventative technologies. I added them, I downloaded the layer, I re-upload the layer, and the controls aren't selected. I found that the scores that I had added for the controls were still there. Like, for example, if I said, you know, it watches for use of native API, when I re-upload it, it will show the score if I hover over it, but it will not show it as selected, which is interesting. So, but you can still use that to do the addition, subtraction, multiplication. I mentioned multiplication a minute ago. I don't know if that's the best way to do it or if it's best to do a subtraction for the preventative controls. Like if the attacker's using it, it's +1 and then -1 for preventative. I don't know. There's probably some documentation somewhere on the best way to do that.
Yeah, that'd be those layers and that kind of stuff would be really valuable if that's properly integrated into an attack simulation tool.
Yeah, so you can see what you're testing against. And again, frankly, this gives you where to test, especially. Start with testing the spots that aren't color-coded where you don't have any detection logic.
Yeah, or if you don't even know what your detection logic is, you run your attack simulations and it spits out saying, hey, you know, these techniques you're really deficient in.
That actually makes me want to ask for that as a capability in a breach and attack simulation tool. Like, can you spit out kind of a pre-made JSON layer for this?
Where oh, if yeah, you were, that would be yeah. handy.
Yeah, where if you've already got it, so you just add it and it can show you like, oh. So a big part of the usefulness here really kind of involves knowing which, because part of the problem here is there's so many sub-techniques, you probably will never get full coverage on all of them unless you're like a Fortune 100. And you know, you've got just money to throw at it. So you do have to do some targeting. And that's where I was kind of thinking, being able to upload a bunch of APT kind of, because they track, you know, hundreds of TA groups, hundreds? No, it looks like dozens, but still quite a few TA and APT groups. And I would love to see a composite in the Attack Navigator that has all of them and has it kind of scored. So you can see like, oh, you know, they almost all use this. So that's a really great place to put some good detection around.
Yeah, you may even be able to get one of these JSON overlays from a threat intel provider, maybe for a particular ATP if it's not already present within the Navigator and it's relevant to your organization, maybe.
All right, I did some research on what other things you can do in terms of trying to figure out how to target, and I found a really, really good article on CSO Online, which I'll stick in the show notes. Definitely worth looking at. But they took a couple of talks that people have done on how to use Attack, and they kind of summarized them. For example, they have a talk that was given at AttackCon from Travis Smith of Tripwire called Attack as a Teacher, where he organized the attack matrix by difficulty of exploitation, or he color-coded them in, you know, kind of what I mentioned before, the Metasploit, the H.G. Moore's Law, where which of these are exploitable to anyone, which one requires additional steps, which ones are cost prohibitive and, you know, require additional infrastructure, and which ones are really, really hard. So that would be a really interesting way of kind of prioritizing, just like H.G. Moore's Law, make sure you have all of the easy ones covered first, then start working on the tougher ones. Certainly would be one way to prioritize. There was another talk in there from Roberto and Jose Rodriguez, who have shown up in the last couple of years doing a lot of threat intel and hunting stuff, where they talk about prioritizing the techniques that you want to look at based on data sources, where they look at how many techniques are associated with each data source. So when you're looking at your logging, you'll want to make sure that you bring in the data sources, which help you monitor a lot of techniques. And that's also a great way of prioritizing what you're doing in your logging. So they actually presented a list. Only 19% of techniques require one data source. 200 techniques require at least two data sources to analyze them. So really interesting stuff there.
All right. So the last thing you can do with Attack is a great place for starting hunts, especially if you've done some previous work with the Attack Navigator or in a spreadsheet to kind of figure out where you're strong and where you're not. It's a great to take a sub-technique or take a technique and use that as the basis of a hunt. I know you have something to say about this, David.
No, sounds lovely.
Yeah, especially with all the information that they give you. For example, enterprise technique bits job. It'll have the list of all the people that use it. And then at the bottom, it has a couple paragraphs called detection. And it says Bits runs as a service. Active Bits tasks can be enumerated using Bits admin. So what you would want to do is you want to monitor usage of the Bits admin tool. And it has the command options. You should watch the transfer, create, add file, set notify, set retry, and resume command options. You can look at admin logs, PowerShell logs, and the Windows event logs for Bits activity. And monitor and analyze network activity generated by Bits, which uses HTTPS and SMB for remote connections. So it definitely, and then it gives you references if you want to dive real deep. So if you wanted to turn around and make this into a hunt on Bits usage, well, now you've got Bits runs as a service and its status can be checked with the SC query. Maybe you want to look at that. I don't know the attacker would be necessarily using that, but that's a place to start. You can look for the Bits admin tool usage. You can look for Bits admin with the transfer or create flags. You can go through PowerShell logs, looking for PowerShell that has triggered Bits admin. You can look for that network activity. Great starting place for a hunt.
Well, I think you could also use it for the reverse of that as well. Because if you're not certain about your coverage, and you're conducting hunts, if you relate your hunts back to the MITRE tech framework, then that can help better categorize your gaps. And so maybe this could be useful in a output product from your threat hunting activities as well.
I'm actually, now that we're talking about it, I'm actually putting together in my head a proposal to work with our threat hunt guy and put together like a combined attack dashboard where we have all of the content from my side and all of the hunts that are going on from his side and like put them together and do something with like the, so we could have like a single view of like what hunts he's been doing and what content I've been creating and then like what the tools cover and stuff like that. Seems like that'd be kind of an interesting viewpoint, interesting dashboard.
Yeah, I think that could help show benefits on both sides, the benefit of doing the hunt and the benefit of the work you're doing on the defensive side when those things overlap.
Yeah. You know what? And what would be even better is to take the IR people's output and add that in there. And not, I'm not talking about like APT or like external threat intel, but like stuff that's been seen internally, like after, you know, an incident response is done. Like they take kind of the findings from the after action report there and they add that to the dashboard too, so that we can see like, what have we specifically seen? Cause it might, for if anything, that would help point out gaps too, maybe gaps in content, like where the content's not working, being like, we've got a whole bunch of content around Bits Admin, but we've never found a bad guy using Bits Admin. Like then the question comes, is it because the content is bad or just bad guys have stopped using that? And that question could probably be answered with some research.
Or you could, or that could inform a hunt or a red team activity.
Yeah.
Or an attack sim. So.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Oh yeah. Combine the breach and attack simulation stuff too. And the red team stuff, 100%. And then you can just kind of flip between the layers and then combine the layers. You have to do some work on figuring out how to combine the layers to. All right. I have a new project. That sounds, I hate that every time we record, I come up with, I need 80 hour weeks is what I need. 80 hour weeks are to not sleep.
I have drugs for that.
All right. So we've described kind of what you can do with attack and why you want to be looking at it if you're not already. So what's new in attack version 9? Well, they've done a couple things. First of all, they spent a lot of effort and time on redefining data sources. Previously to this, they had where you should collect data was pretty much the only thing they had in there. For example, I pulled one specific, they gave us a couple examples here where it used to be, they would tell you to monitor the process creations and that was it. There were a couple things as part of a process creation though. For example, you could monitor the command line parameters, which is frankly what happens most of the time when people are thinking process creation, they're thinking the Windows process creation event, and which includes the command line if you tell it to, which is an extra configuration. But also there are things that you can do in terms of monitoring how that process interacts with other processes, how the API functions are executed by the process, things like processes reaching into the memory of other processes and, you know, meddling in there the way they're not supposed to. So there are additional kind of layers of complexity here that they've added some improvement there. So they're apparently releasing even more improvements and details in their next release in October, 6 months down the road. So that seems cool. The goal here is to use the data sources and the new data components to really try and improve the detection engineering process and really looking at kind of where you should be looking to find these techniques being used. Second, they added tweaks for macOS. They added more content there. And in October, they're planning on adding even more content and they're adding Linux content in October. So that's good. I can definitely see kind of why they're pretty heavily focused on Windows. Windows does tend to get the majority of the attacker attention, but not all of it.
There must be some Mac geeks that are really into the attack techniques or the attack framework, because Mac is not a huge part of most corporate organizations. So it's really diminishing returns on how much time you spend on Mac OS if you've only got a handful, because it's not like it's generally not an enterprise system.
No, and I imagine Linux is still pretty big since most of the cloud stuff really, and the Docker stuff really seems to prefer it. I was straight out of my ass. I have no idea if that's true or not. Third, they have consolidated the what used to be the AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud Compute platforms into a single infrastructure service platform, where they're trying to align it more in terms of generic APIs rather than specific log sources for specific spaces. So for example, instead of calling out, you know, changing EC2 instances, they have kind of a generic modify cloud compute infrastructure, create cloud instance, delete cloud instance, revert cloud instance, keeping it generic. In addition, they added the Google Workspace platform. Since they already covered Office 365, they wanted to cover Google's version of that as well. So, and those can be found if you go into the attack.mitre.org page, go to matrices, and it's under cloud IaaS. Finally, they have released attack for containers this release. This is an attack research team partnered with the Center for Threat Informed Defense to develop this contribution, which is interesting. I know almost nothing about containers other than some vague ideas of how they work. Are you familiar with containers at all?
No, but Tyler is.
I mean, I played with the Docker. So last year's Boss of the Sock included a Docker component. I got, I think, 16 out of 19 questions in there. So I'm obviously an expert, but they really handheld you through it. So I don't know. It's interesting talking about going where they don't maintain a lot of the same logs that you see in Windows, and attackers can go lateral without generating the same types of events. So it's definitely interesting. All right. Attack is a big old beast, and we could spend an awful lot of time talking about it, but we are trying to commit to 30 minutes or less for an episode. Is there anything specific you'd like to call out on this?
I just say that if you don't know Attack, you really need to start. And I think that this is going to be a critical part of any security maturity model or effort for focusing defense in the future for teams if they have not already started doing this.
Yeah, you've definitely seen it in the vendor space. Every vendor maps their stuff to Attack. It seems like every other conference talk involves Attack.
And if you're going to be doing risk-based alerting, I think it's important to have Attack tied into that as well.
Yeah, because a lot of these techniques, I mean, this is a lot of the kind of the same stuff we've talked about before, but for example, scheduled task jobs, that is super common. You don't want to alert every time somebody schedules a task. Valid accounts, attackers using valid accounts. You obviously can't alert every time somebody uses or creates a valid account. That would actually make an interesting layer. I wonder if anybody's done kind of a risk-based alerting layer in Attack Navigator where they've ranked these in terms of how diagnostic they are. And you know, maybe how many points risk-based alerting should use. Might be an interesting one too. So I'm just the idea person. Somebody else, one of our listeners, is going to have to go ahead and take care of that.
All right. Well, that's it. So thanks everybody for listening to the Security Serengeti podcast. Follow us on Twitter at SerengetiSec and download and listen to us on your favorite podcast app and leave us a review. That certainly helps out and hopefully get more ears on the podcast.